When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Awardner, and I'm very excited to say that I have the fabulous Trini Woodall with me on this episode. Now, Trini is such an interesting character, and I was, full disclosure, I was a bit scared about going to this interview because if you watch her Facebook Lives, and I strongly advise that you do, clearly the show notes will contain links to those, she's very high energy and one thought becomes another in the space of a nanosecond. And as podcasting goes, you know, you try to have some sort of conversation. I'm happy for conversations to go absolutely anywhere and in any direction, but I really didn't know what to expect with Trini. But I was really surprised and pleased and so happy because, yes, she's Trini exactly as you would expect. But we talked about things like starting a business in a very competitive beauty industry. We talked about finding your authentic voice, finally being able to express yourself in the way that feels 100% you. We talk about the role of social media, her career in media. We also talk about burnout, which for someone, if you watch Trini, for someone who has that kind of energy, I often wonder when I see them, well, if that's the high, what does the low look like? And we talk a little bit about burning out. It's just a really well-rounded chat, and she's very calm, very, very calm. And it was something I wasn't expecting, but she's just got this, the energy that you get from her Facebook Lives, this high energy, it's very inclusive, it's very welcoming. You can't help but watch it and feel like she is talking to you. And when you're with her, she has this incredibly warm, sweet, kind, generous energy. She looks you in the eye. She really gives a damn about what you have to say. And she's fun. So yeah, many, many ticks on my people that I want to spend more time with list. So the hook of this chat is to talk about Trini London, which is her makeup brand. And it's a brilliant brand. It's stackable makeup, little pots of makeup with everything. It's got your foundation, it's got your eye makeup, it's got your cheek contour, it's got your highlighter, everything that you could possibly want. And all these pots stick together, stack together, and you can do your whole look with just these pots on your fingertips. And to be honest, as somebody who loves playing with makeup, I was like, sure, whatever. But I watched Trini do her makeup in front of me during this podcast without a mirror. And one of the first things I did when I got home was take off all my makeup and try to do exactly the same thing. And by Jiminy, I don't think there's a lot of makeup you could do this with, but you can do it with the Trini London stack. And now I'm a complete convert. I wasn't sure before I had used it previously, and because it's cream-based, I thought, yeah, I don't think it's got staying power. But I'm going to really give this a good few weeks of trialing and see if I'm wrong. Because I watched Trini do her makeup right in front of me, and she used her BFF cream, she used the foundation, the cheek contour, and a bit of eyeshadow, and then just a little bit of lip product, and it transformed her. Now, she looked great without makeup anyway, and she has lashes, so that's done. But she looked, it was really prettifying. And I guess if you like that look, if you don't want to look over made up and you don't want to look like makeup is wearing you, it's a great choice. And the way that you actually go about Twinny London is you go onto the website, you put in some details like your hair colour, your eye colour, your skin tone, etc. And it throws back at you all of the colours that might suit you or will suit you. So you can't really go wrong, which I think is an excellent, excellent idea. Because let's face it, who hasn't bought something thinking, oh, I saw it, that it was used on such and such, or so-and-so said they loved it. And then you get it at home on you and it just looks absolutely ghastly. So it's worth going to have a look. And obviously the show notes will contain the link to Twinny London. So you can take that little questionnaire. It's very, very simple. And honestly, it throws back the results in a couple of seconds. It's really, really easy. So that's what you're going to get from this show. I hope you enjoy it. I will be putting all of the links to Twinny, her social media, Facebook Lives, etc., in the show notes. And if you want to get in touch with me, I would love to hear from you. Just email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. Or as you know, I'm usually on Twitter and Instagram. So DM me on there. I am at Emma Guns. And if you are enjoying the show, I would be so grateful if you could head over to iTunes or wherever you listen and subscribe. Maybe leave a 5-star rating and review, you know, if you're feeling frisky. Or just tell all of your friends and say, hey, listen to this podcast. It's great. That's what you think. So anyway, here we go. I'm very pleased to say that on this episode, it's Twinny Woodall on The Emma Guns Show, talking all things Twinny London and more. There's absolutely no doubt where I could be today. Not only am I surrounded by fairy lights, I'm also surrounded by stacks. And you may have noticed this or may have heard it, in the sense you may have heard the door close, nothing more. I just used the infamous bathroom.
You did.
And it was quite a moment. It was like going to Disneyland and seeing the castle.
It's much smaller. Both Madame Hirons, Hirons and Nadine came in. It's much smaller. Like, you know, when you kind of get somebody saying, oh, it's much smaller. But it is small, but it's got mirror.
Oh, and it took me a while to figure out what the angle is. I was like, well, how are they doing this magic? And then I realised you obviously have wonderful natural daylight.
It's the best light. I mean, it is such good light that they were both quite excited by the light. And then what happened, silly me, I had another set of interesting women who were coming in the bathroom and also coming to see me. And one of Marcia Kilgore, who's founded Bliss, and she came along and she was just fab, but I realised half an hour before, my God, it's dark. You know, because I just always do. I was doing these through the summer.
Yeah.
So then we put a ring light on, which felt very unnatural for me because I never do things with ring lights.
Yeah.
And it gives a kind of white outness. So we did this ring light. The ring light in the end, she was very happy with the ring light. She loved, felt it was very
happy. Shares light of choice.
It is, yes. But I find it kind of blue and cold. And if you can catch light well on my window, I feel it's a much, you see things better and...
Natural daylight is unbelievably flattering. Yeah. Ring light blurs out the stuff that you don't want to see, which is why
people love it.
But that bathroom is the home of so much activity.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's a whirlwind of activity.
Because the lives, the stories, everything. Now, tell me about all of that, because I've known you for many years. Mm-hmm. I bought your books. Oh. I watched your show religiously. And I wanted to be you, and no disrespect to Susanna, I didn't want to have, which obviously I'm a curvier girl, but I always wanted, why can't I be like Twinny? So when I'd read the books, because obviously one has to get to that point where one accepts oneself. But I've known you for years, and then it's, have you seen Twinny's videos? Mm. And it was just this incredible sort of thing on the scene of, you do realise Twinny's, have you seen what Twinny's doing? So tell me about all of this.
Well, it's very interesting, because when you look at the... change from being on a show where you're edited. So when we did What Not to Wear, it was a very edited show. And even though we didn't have any scripts, still they would, you know, the producers and editors decide, okay, let's formulate how these women are. Mm-hmm. And we were ourselves on the show, but they would kind of, I was this sort of tall, skinny, tough one, and Susanna was warm and cozy and curvy. And it was good. It resonated with the women because, you know, you might have wanted to dresser I was dressing, but you were very drawn more to Susanna's emotional connection with women, you know, and I think that was how it was for years. And then we did shows, we became, you know, Yesterday's News here, and we did shows internationally, and because we didn't have a legacy, when we did those shows, they edited us a bit better as we were, and we did kind of rather mad shows, India, Israel, Australia. We kind of went on this world trip for about 3 or 4 years. But when I came back and I knew that I'd had a burnout from working, you know, I'd leave London on a Sunday night mm-hmm. and leave Terminal 5. I got to know the baggage checking people at Terminal 5 so well. And then I would be away and come back on a Friday night or a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. We both had kids. And that was very tough. And I knew also I want to do something by myself. Not that I don't love Susanna mm-hmm. and I will love her until the day I die. But I just knew I needed, for me to prove to myself, could I do something by myself? Mm. And that was one thing I hadn't tried yet, you know. So
let's dig into that, because I think that's really interesting. And what you can see, I've watched your videos and I just thought, I wonder whether this is the first time she's found her authentic voice without wanting to sound too
trite. But I think it's a mixture of things. When you hit 50, there is a freedom about hitting 50. And I remember this girlfriend of mine who's 4 years older than me said, you know, when you hit 50, during the certain freedom, I was thinking in my 40s, oh, yeah, okay. You know, just because I was in a place of slight fear. I reached menopause a little bit early, so I had all that kind of feelings that you get around menopause where you feel the carpet is pulled from underneath you and you lose your confidence. So all those things were occurring a little bit earlier for me. And so when I got to 50, I did find that freedom. And the biggest freedom of it was not giving a shit. And so, therefore, when you're then talking to people, you talk entirely how you want to talk. And I remember the moment when I realised the joy and the fascination with what Facebook could be in my life, because I went to see Facebook and started doing a few Instagram. You know, I started doing Instagram like 2012. But for 2 or 3 years, it was like pictures, everyone else, you know, family photos, that kind of stuff. And then I started to do a bit of video. And then I went to see Facebook and they said, we like those videos, do them on Facebook. And I remember leaving the Facebook office and I went back to my bathroom and I just stuck my phone on the wall and I just said, you know, hi, I'm Trini, I'm in my bathroom. And then these people started appearing, you know, leaving comments. Hi, Trini, I'm in Israel. Hi, Trini. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, you know, tapping away as I was trying to put on makeup and talk to them. And I thought, this is brilliant. There's no editor, there's no producer, there's nobody telling me how I should be. I can swear as I like. I can just, the joy of it was tremendous. And so I just started doing those. And I found, because I found in my bathroom, it was very cozy. And it's a different bathroom now, because when I started, it was in my house that I rented out. And it was a really beautiful bathroom and a big bathroom and with this huge east-facing light. And it was kind of great. And I didn't have anyone else in it. I would just literally come in, go up to the bathroom, stick the phone on the wall and chat. Mm. And then I had to rent that house out because I was building a business and I couldn't afford to live in the house, rented where I am now. And I now do it from this one, which is fine. But when I was looking for the property, I kept going straight to the bathroom. And they'd say, don't you want to see the bedroom? And I say, no, the bathroom light has to be good. And that kind of drove me to my rental, hypothetically. But it is, it's a brilliant medium. It really is a brilliant medium. And you learn a tremendous amount about women. And I'm sure you find in your work and anyone who is, you know, communicating directly with an audience, you then feel on top of it. You feel, you know, you really sense what women are needing to know more. And then hopefully you deliver content that resonates with them.
And I think when I've had Caroline Hirons and when I've had Nadine Baggett on the show, particularly with Nadine, actually, having written both of us for magazines for such a long time.
Yeah.
It was only once we started putting out our own type of content and having a direct dialogue with people that you realise actually there's quite a big disconnect.
As being a beauty journalist.
Being a beauty journalist, because your main dialogue is with brands.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
So when you start speaking to real women,
yeah,
it transforms everything. Mm-hmm. And that, again, my entry level into it actually was QVC.
Which is one of the best places to communicate directly with women.
Exactly. Yeah. And I did some work as a guest presenter. Mm. And then on Twitter, this dialogue started to happen. Mm-hmm. And I thought, literally had one of those light bulb moments where I just thought,
have I ever really answered the question correctly? And so started doing it that way. Mm. And I guess with the TV shows and all those backgrounds, yes, you must have had a dialogue of sorts, but has this been something completely different for you?
Totally different. And I think it then, I had already begun to have the idea of Trini London. And so I was always asking them questions to see how they felt about stuff. And I would kind of seed ideas with them and just see how they were reacting without telling them things and just see what would come back. And it helped me to really steer the business, because even though they didn't know I was launching, I was thinking, this is what they're feeling about this, and this is the difficulty they have here. And I'd already worked a lot on the formulas and the colours, but it enabled me to think how I can come up with solutions for people, because I think there's so much choice. You know, in the world of makeup, there is a tremendous amount of choice. And when I used to travel around, and in every country we filmed, we'd have a different makeup team, and they'd all be young makeup artists with Ignot in Poland or MAC in Australia or, you know, every brand and every age of makeup artist. And the first day was always tricky because I'm quite a tough taskmaster. And we had a show where we'd probably be filming 20 episodes and there would be 8 women in each episode that we'd make over. And so we did a day, you know, 3 days of filming, meeting those women and a day of a catwalk show, which was their makeover day. So they'd all sit there and we'd be nurturing them. We'd got to know them a bit. And they'd sit there, and the first day they always had the hardest time because those makeup artists would just literally say, oh, red lips in the season, whatever that woman looked like, bum, 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 next. Mm-hmm. And then we'd have this moment where they'd have done all the makeup. We're like an hour before the catwalk show, and I'd just go, you got to learn something here. So we do that, that, and that. And then the next day I'd sit down with the teams and I'd say, look, you've got to think of these women by their skin, hair and eye combinations. You've got to think of that face. You can't just presume a look on somebody because it won't suit them, you know. And that has always been a guiding principle. It's like with clothing. Mm. You know, wear what's in fashion, but if it doesn't suit you, don't wear it. If it suits you and you get in the right colour, fantastic, and it's in fashion, great. Mm-hmm. But you will be noticed and feel good about yourself if you follow that basic principle, and I think it's in every principle. For me, when I then came back from all those travels, I had all those women's thoughts in my head, and a lot of them would be every age, from like 25 to 80. But they might just say, you know, girl going into her first job would say, I've worn the same makeup such a long time, I don't know what my look is anymore. You know, because she felt old in her years, whereas I'd look at her as a 40-year-old woman and think, you're 23, you're like, you know. But she'd say, I've done this since 16, and what should I be doing now? How should I present myself as a woman? You know, and those times occur in our lives as women. They occur definitely when we leave uni and we go to our first job. They occur when we're kind of going to leave a corporate world and become a mum and suddenly be in a different environment of women that we're not used to. Mm. We're going to be there if we're a mum who's, she has her kids early and then she goes back to a corporate world that she wasn't in since she was 25 and she's 38 and everyone else is 25 or 30. And she, like, how does she feel good about herself? Menopause, being left by a man. I mean, these all have a huge effect on us. And so it's giving women the tools that they can feel present. Present is the most important thing. You're present and you're noticed.
Present and noticed.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because it's sort of emotional and physical.
It is emotional. And I've always come from the viewpoint that makeup, cosmetics, is not about the decoration. Mm-hmm. It's about... Trini listeners has very kindly commented that I have lovely skin, but as a teenager, and you will know this if you were a regular listener, I had terrible acne. Mm. And so I started getting terrible acne from the age of about 12 because it was hormone related. Mm-hmm. And I just threw myself headfirst into my mother's beauty bag and would just slather on foundation. But I'm mixed race and my mother is not. So I basically wore like 01 ivory over vivid red acne. But it made me feel confident because at least the redness was
diminished. I had the same. I mean, I had cystic acne from 13 to 30, so I know exactly how you feel. Mm. And I remember my solution was a tremendous amount of No. 7 mousse fake tan, just like a pizza shop on my face. But I know that feeling, and I know how much it affects one's self-confidence. Mm. Anyone who has something where they feel that somebody's talking to a part of your skin and not your eyes.
Yes.
Or deciding which restaurants you go to on a date because you don't want the overhead lighting to be really shocking for your protruding spots. Mm. Mm. Going to bed in your makeup, you know, because you don't want anyone to see anything.
Just, all of those things. Mm. And I remember I was very lucky. I was put on the pill in the sense that my acne just sort of almost disappeared overnight. And then when my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer and there was like a potential HRT link, I panic stopped taking the pill and my skin flared up. And I remember doing QVC and I was in the green room and I wanted to, my face was really itching and it was all bobbly, like under the skin. Yeah. I was like, don't use your hands. So I started doing this, like nudging my face with my shoulder to just try and...
Gently ease.
And again, I had never felt anything like it for so many years of, I feel self-conscious, and it made me realise how, I hate blessed because hashtag blessed does drive me a bit crazy, but I hadn't realised how much of an impact it has. So that was the basis of the stacks, to deliver confidence in a stack.
To deliver confidence stack and deliver, because I think even I and you, who has a great knowledge of beauty, I'll go up to Bobbi Brown and I'll see 300 foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Which one? I'll go up to NYX and see 800 lipsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Which one? I'll go up to Estee Lauder and think, is this brand too old for me? Have I turned into my mum? You know, there's things we associate. I'll go up to a counter in Peter Jones and somebody will suggest to me a makeup colour and I'll go outside and it will be orange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all those things mean that we know retail is changing anyway, but we always felt we had to go somewhere to get makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was originally thinking, will I sell this online? How would I sell it? But I thought if I could help a woman decide what suits her. So one thing is to deliver makeup in these little pots, which are here. Mm-hmm. And you have one little pot and they snap into the other pot. And they sort of, you know, they're just delicate gorgeousness things. Mm-hmm. And you snap together. So
also when you've got six, which is kind of an ideal number to have, they make an excellent microphone for doing Insta story karaoke with Caroline Hirons.
Oh my God, yes, I can feel it now. Sorry, I've got such a bad voice. My boyfriend always says it's terrible. But so I think the idea was, I want to create this thing that I had in Muji pots with sellotape together, mm-hmm. mushed together with formulas, yeah. Which is how the concept started. So it took me eight prototypes to get to this, or in fact, 11. We are at 11. To get the perfect snap, to make it airtight, to mm-hmm. make it premium, all those things. And then to work on the formulas took about 2 years. And then once we work on the formulas, it was about testing on women and thinking, can we take that skin, hair and eye idea and actually make it into a piece of software? Not like you take a photo of yourself and it will put makeup on you, because that to me is a game. It's gamification of makeup, and I wanted a sort of emotional solution.
Sorry, I just had a moment there. The gamification of makeup.
Yeah.
That wasn't such a long hashtag. I would trademark that.
But I think that's where some of makeup is heading in many areas. In you know, when I look at social media, it's going so far away from what I believe is really fundamentally great for a woman. And I know that people go through phases where they want to totally cover up, because you and I have both been there, and it's their mask to be able to face the world. But I see so many girls and I think, you have such great skin, why have you got 3 inches of makeup on?
Well, I call it the homogenization of young girls, because they all are putting exactly the same angles on their faces.
That's so true.
The metallic highlights.
It's very good, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Homogenization of girls. Yeah.
I feel like I want to do you want to do a big feature on it where you've just got loads of mannequins of different colour skin with the same yes. face and contour.
That would be very, very effective. Visually, it would be very effective too.
But because I do, I had this conversation earlier today actually, but when I was younger, the way that you would be in your tribe at school would be by, you'd have the same shoes or you'd carry the same school bag.
Yeah.
It was those wicker things that you could get from Oxfam. But now it's, the tribes are by, I mean, fashion, obviously, but yes. It's by this kind of, these matte lipsticks and...
Yeah, it's the Kylie generation, it's the flick of the eye, it's looks that make you feel you've got to a stage of being acceptable within a tribe. But it's also, I mean, I think, so if I look at the establishment of, like, Charlotte Tilbury, I think, how fantastic, because she totally changed the makeup industry. She made people say, all of you big giants, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
New things must happen. And so coming on the back of, you know, a brand like that, I come from a very different place. So, you know, she's an experienced makeup artist who's worked with hundreds of models and actresses who are phenomenally famous and beautiful. And I come from a place of doing makeovers on unknown women around the world who are in all different walks of life and all different ages. And so the premise for me has been, make everyone feel the best she can be. from a place of those women,
mm-hmm.
and other brands do it from different places. So I don't do it from a professional makeup artist point of view. And although I work very closely with Charlotte, who worked for 20 years with Susanna and I doing makeup and helping with those teams of makeup artists. So she's been fantastic on colours, and she's got an eye, an amazing eye, because we'll get back samples and I'll go, I think it's okay. And she goes, I think it still has a tiny bit too much terracotta. And she has such a perfectionist eye, which I love.
Mm.
Together, it's looking at which women suit what products. So when we then decided we were just going to do online, how could we create something where you go in and say, this is my skin, this is my hair, this is my eye colour? And we say, this is what you suit.
Mm.
So instead of saying there's, you know, our range has 60 products, and we're going to say 22 really suit you. You can buy anything you want from our range, but if you want to know what sits well on your skin, then there's a solution for you, and you can buy it in a stack.
And I'll obviously be putting the link to Trini London on the show notes on iTunes and emmaguns.com, but I have done this process myself, and it is so easy. You answer a couple of questions, and they're not questions that you would need any help with.
No.
The answers. So what colour are your eyes? What colour is your hair? What colour is your skin? And it is remarkable how quickly it comes up and how many options you have and what you can play around with in all of that.
Yeah.
And it is really clever, because I think whenever I speak to real women now,
mm-hmm.
their thing is, I'm confused, or I don't really know. How many women have you spoken to who say they don't particularly enjoy going up to a beauty counter because they don't want to be sold something?
Mm.
They want to make a decision for themselves, but they don't know what the answer is.
Yes, too many to mention. I mean, it's the biggest issue, I think, of... what's very interesting to me in this market is how many women don't change their makeup.
Mm.
And they don't change their makeup because they find something that worked for them. And sometimes you can take it back to when they felt most attractive. You know, so that moment when they blossomed and they got their confidence, they found a makeup look, and then 5, 10, 15 years later, they're wearing that makeup look. But their face has changed, their life has changed, their hair has changed, everything's changed. But they'll stick to it because they're sticking to that feeling of confidence.
Yes.
But they will catch sight of themselves and think, and there will be that. And I can see it. I'll see it immediately on a woman's face, thinking, time to relook, time to revisit. Mm. And you know, little physical things happen, like our cheekbones go down, and you know, our eyes sag, and you know, things happen, and our skin loses a bit of elasticity. So how do we get it back up? And we can do all the things that are on the market. You know, I talked about how I've had Botox since 35, and so I believe in doing things for my skin that are not just to do products, but it's the first thing you can do to change your face. You know, and so I think I wanted something so simple and uncomplicated and beautiful, because the stack to me is beautiful, and I love beautiful things, and I love the idea that I don't have to take, you know, that wallowing makeup bag and think, what do I take out of this today to go to work, and what do I take out of this at work to go out in the evening? You know, is that always decanting or compromising? And I just thought, I never want to compromise. I want to be going from anywhere with any size bag, doing anything, and always have everything I need with me. So,
and I have a walloping great big. Well, it's not that big. It is quite
cumbersome.
Sturdy. Mm. Cumbersome is exactly the right word. And the stack isn't at all.
Mm.
You can apply. So let's go through the premise of, you can apply all the formulas with your fingers.
Yeah.
The pots, although they might look quite small, actually all of the formulas, a little goes a very long way.
The pigment is really dense. So when we were making it, so like the first, I'm going to just do it now because I haven't done my makeup. I've got to go out later. So I'm literally going to do it as we're on the radio, on the podcast. But I've got my BFFF I'm rubbing in now. And this is, I wear, oddly right now, today I'm wearing light and medium together.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that's something that would irritate me. But my skin is going through to get its winter face, and it's winter face, I'll then be in light, but there's still a tiny bit harking on to that moment I wore low SPF in the summer. And that would just awaken up my face, and it was our decision to make it all cream based because I want to be able to pile it on and for it not to sit on my face, and to be able to then put something on later in the day. So foundation, which we call Just a Touch.
Now, Just a Touch is a foundation and concealer.
And concealer. But the point of it, to me, is... I'm literally going and showing you a finger thing. And that will be my whole face. So this will last me 6 to 9 months. And I just blended in and blended in.
And you, as I watched your video with Queen Nadine,
yes.
You just do the central panel.
I just do the central panel and I try and leave. If I'm really tired, I'll do more under my eyes. And what I'll generally do is put a bit of BFF, more BFF under my eye because it's got quite a lot of
X-factor. Now, does BFF pearl. Come in a pot or is BFF...
It comes in a tube with a little pot, which you decant it into. Because I want you not to have to carry an extra tube around. So we always have a pot. And as we're developing the brand, other things will come with little baby pots that they can sit into.
Baby stacks.
And then we have a highlighter called The Right Light. We'll bring a second colour out, actually. And this, I've never been good at highlighter, but this I just want to go on the top of my cheekbone.
So is that a universal highlighter?
This is a universal highlighter, but we are actually bringing out a more rosy shade This will go every skin tone, but we'll bring out one that for caramel to a really dark brown skin is also very beautiful because our whole range goes to every skin tone, but on the highlighter, our second colour was stuck in pigment production hell. So that's coming out of that. And then... cheekbones is something I never did before because I was never a contourer, but I want something that was a shadow. So it's a really weird colour.
It's
like a taupey, sludgy grey. And you look at it and you think, really? And you take
exactly my face when I opened it. I was like,
really? So you take, it looks like mud that's dried, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound attractive?
Like a clay mask.
It looks like a clay mask. But for me, I go and I start at my hairline and I just draw it back in and I just want to create a shadow.
Listen, she's doing
cheekbone.
All of this. Sorry to call you she. Trini's doing all of this without a mirror. Trini is going on instinct and just using her middle finger to feel her cheekbone and draw that line, and it's perfect.
You know who I was taught that by? Was, I think I put the right light on twice. Hang on, have I done that? No, it's fine. I was taught that by Trish McVoy.
Ooh.
And years ago, I met Trish, and she had just... I don't know why I'm saying this. I think she'll be fine with it. Her husband's a plastic surgeon, so she's staying at the Barclay Hotel in London, and I was a beauty journalist.
One
doing
of my favourite hotels in London.
And she... So Trinia and I'd been writing the Telegraph and had written some nice things about her because at the time she brought out that Filofax thing and it was a really convenient thing. And I think she's fab. So I walk in and she goes, "Hi darling, I had a facelift 2 days ago. I'm a bit puffy, but isn't it looking good?" I had never met her before in my life. So typical American confident fabulous woman. So I go, "Hi Trish," quite in awe actually. And she says, "Okay, sit down, honey. I'm going to teach you how to do your makeup without a mirror." And I was like, "Ah!" You know, I had all those. I had a bit of the pizza face at the time. So she made me spend about 20 minutes really just feeling, you know, how deep is my eye socket? How much is my brow bone going over my eyelid? You know, how high is my cheekbone? How much does it go in? And the reason, in a way, there's many reasons I don't do brushes. One is because cream-based, I think, is more flattering. Mm-hmm. But the other is because brushes get filthy. And we might clean them often, but then they end up... How often do they end up? At the bottom of your handbag with the coins, you know?
Oh,
okay.
Money and hygiene for me is a big no-no.
So I think a finger's going to be cleaner because I think more about where my finger's been than many other things in my handbag. But also, I wanted to be able to just be able to put on this colour and not have the brush stop you having a connection with your face. Because I think brushes, you know, tons of women who... like now use my Golden Glow, would get the brush, the bronzer brush, and go, zzz, all right? And when you said, not the mortification of those teenagers.
Homogenization. Yeah.
But there's a homogenization in that process too, that you flatten your face because all you do is you put a one colour over the whole face and you do it because you want to, because the idea of a tan face makes you feel energetic.
Mm.
And I think it's that emotional connection with a physical action. And if we really looked at it, we'd sort of see, but where is the beauty of that face gone? It's slightly faded because it's just all covered in fake tan. So by, you know, not using a brush to not know your face, I think if you feel your face, you could then do your makeup without a mirror. I'd like every woman to get to a stage where they can do their makeup without a mirror and feel their face.
This is an Instagram live for Emma Guns. And
really, just to have that freedom because, and then it's about trust. It's like we need to trust we look good. It has a correlation in a really warped way with the times when you might think of the three outfits on a Sunday morning you might wear during the week to something. You might actually try them on, think they look great, take a picture, whatever. And then that Tuesday you're going out to the big event and you put it on, you think, What was I thinking? It looks shit. I've put on £5 at least. Of course you haven't. You might be a tiny bit bloated from eating ice cream or having a drink. Mm-hmm. But generally, you're the same, but your feeling about yourself has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about having the confidence to trust you look good or trust that's working for you. And the more we can kind of, you know, that touching your face is nurturing yourself.
Mm.
There's an element to that too.
Oh, totally, with the whole self-care.
Yeah.
Listeners, I have to flag this up.
Yeah.
Right. These are the four. Did you put five products on?
Yeah.
You put your BFFF cream on.
Yeah. I put
the right
my
light,
Just a Touch
just a
foundation.
Touch. Then you put a tiny bit of lipstick on.
Yeah.
And you did your cheekbones.
Yeah.
And each of it was just on Trini's middle finger.
Yeah.
So a very small amount.
Yeah.
You're now popping
I'm
it on your cheeks.
I'm putting the lip glow on my cheeks because a lip glow is not sticky in our world. And so you can put it anywhere.
But the transformation is, and maybe this sounds like a, it's pretty. It's just instantly prettifying.
Yeah,
it's enhanced.
Yeah.
It's, your skin is glowing.
Yeah.
It was glowing before, by the way, without makeup on. But it's just, I would have said if you came down like that, that you had spent 20 minutes...
Thank you.
Using a brush to put on foundation and doing...
Yeah.
But it just looks incredibly natural. And I've seen it with my own
eyes
now.
You see it with your eyes. You see. I think it's... sometimes we feel things more complex than they are, you know. And,
yes.
And I can look at those kind of eye makeup tutorials. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to show you. Because it's... For me, I've never been able to do... Oh, smoking eye, Jesus Christ, and all that kind of stuff. So... I thought to myself when we were doing eyes, you know, how do we do a really nice... I'm just getting out because I want to just show, and I might. This is now when I balls it up totally.
By the way, listeners, we're in Trini's
office,
and it is... There's product everywhere. It's amazing. Works.
So if I'm now... Let me see what I can do, and I've got to even see if I've got it here. Chariot. I wanted to show you. Chariot. Can you see Chariot from there?
I can't see Chariot.
Can you see Chariot?
That's it.
Yes,
there she is.
So Chariot is... So I have on... So I'm going to put on... Yeah, so putting on eye
with your finger.
Without a mirror?
Without a mirror. So I'm
going to
put
lady.
On my day colour, and this is called Wisdom. So I just go inside with my ring finger, and I just put it underneath my brow bone. So I'm really trusting that I can feel under
crease.
My brow bone.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. To find her crease is what...
To find my crease, exactly. So that would just be my day look.
Flicking
but
heck.
It's not that difficult. I mean, I've got, I'll look in the mirror in a second and see. But a dark
oh,
colour...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And any of these you can actually use. We
Ooh.
Don't stop using a brush, but you could use an eyeliner
mm-hmm.
brush, you know. And so you take that, and then I'm just going to start putting it on my eyelid, because then I trust the density of pigment to go on a place where I at least make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of just feel inside my socket and just go behind the eyeball in that back of the socket and build up the colour. And then I might take a clean finger and just blend it out.
This is extraordinary.
You know?
So by using the ring finger and finding that, also what you're doing is you're slightly enlarging the eye because you're going ever so slightly beyond the...
I'm going beyond the back of the
line,
eyelid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, for me, I wanted eye shades where you could use one and it nearly looks like two. I mean, I put Wisdom on first and then Chariot, but Chariot is a colour, which is a really good colour for you, by the way,
oh.
is this, if this oxidised gold
oh.
with a bit of sludgy green... And it just, it becomes different colours in the light. And
I
like colours that do that.
How did you come up with the names, by the way? One of my dreams is to make my living entirely from naming beauty products.
It was a mixture. So there were... I started off with friends of mine, all right, people who had been influential in my life in some way. So either they had, you know, I have three girlfriends who... were in a position to fund the business to an extent, and they each put some money in on a tax scheme, a SEI scheme. And so I named them after those women.
Mm-hmm.
I named them after people in my life who mean just are good friends. And then my daughter, because it was really important that she felt a part of the business, because she was feeling like a sort of war widow from not seeing her mum so much. So I said, you can name the lip glosses. You know, so the lip glows are her, Lila. Mm-hmm. And then she has, thank God, two friends called Thea, one's pronounced Thea, and then Maddie and Talis. And so she's got more friends than that, so she obviously wants me to make more lip glows. And then Charlotte, who's our makeup artist, loves tarot. And she said, I think we should call the eye shades after tarot cards. And I kind of like that idea. I went through a phase where I might have looked at tarot cards once, but they're wonderful. And so she really looked closely at the colours and thought, you know, Fortune, we want it to be this sort of burnished gold, coppery colour. And Chariot is exactly that. It's like, imagine a golden chariot that's been oxidised. And you found it hundreds of years later. It's that kind of colour. Empress is this rich, lovely brown. Universe is this kind of black garnet colour. You know? So, and then we've got strength and lovers and wisdom and justice.
Hadn't even made the connection, but of course.
So they're all named after that. And I said, well, Charlotte, I hope there's lots of tarot cards because we don't want to run out. So she said, no, I'll find lots, don't worry. So it's... and then our foundation colours, because... there's two reasons I didn't call them beige one and biscuit and almond, because I think
I don't want nuts on my face.
Yeah, I don't want produce on my face at all. And I don't want people to think, well, if I'm beige in that range, I'll be beige in this range, because that's what many people do. And then they just, if they're ever buying online especially, they'll think, well, beige must mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'm going to just name them after people. So they are the Bambi, Lily, Clara, Amelia.
How many foundation shades are there?
There's 14. And they're very stretchy and they don't go in order. So they don't go lightest to darkest. They go light, slightly pinkier, then slightly yellower, then a bit darker. And they kind of have this journey. Mm. So when you do Match to Me on the site, it's really important you watch videos, because we had all the women who you see on the site are our Facebook and Instagram followers. None of them are people who are professional models. And so it was important they would discuss their skin and say, you know, Yes, this guy. Amber, you know, I usually take the palest range in a foundation shade. My skin burns in the sun after 10 minutes, blah, blah. And then somebody saying, yeah, that's me. Mm-hmm. So it was more than just a colour chart, or saying, the classic one for me is, hey, check if you have green or blue veins. Now tell me, in all honesty, how the fuck do you know if a vein is green or blue? Tell me.
I can't give you an answer, Trini. I feel threatened. I don't know. Yeah. It's
tricky.
Veiny.
Yeah, it's veiny. So I think finding out what colour suits you is quite easy.
Because I agree,
you listen
Trini.
To the videos and hopefully you'll know your colour. And if you have any problems, we have a customer desk, and we have this thing called Zen Desk. So it's a really important thing when you're a new business to... really, really, really listen to your customer. Mm. And there was a wonderful man who wrote a book about customer care who had a shoe business called Zespin or something. I can't remember the name. I'm going to say it wrong, but a very successful online shoe business. And he wrote this book, and it was mainly about customer care. And so all the messages on customer care are me. Like, hello, please hold on.
Amazing.
One of us is sleeping or taking a poo, but we'll be with you shortly. the Zen desk is always manned by one or two people in the office, and so it will ring on the computer. So if I'm there, I'll just go, hi. You know, so any of us could answer. And we must have probably about 200 or 300 a day. Some people just saying, I love the products, I'm so excited, and other people saying, where's my package? But we're generally, I'm really happy with where our customer service is. And when you're growing a small business, because in today's world, when you're on social media, people... if they don't get through to you straight away, we'll go on social media and say, oh, this was shit. And we haven't had any of that, because I hope we're dealing with them as quickly, you know, dealing with everything that comes out.
Well, as you say, small business, I have worked in the beauty industry as a journalist for a long time. And now as a freelancer of coming up for 5.5 years, I am... so in awe of anybody who tries to start a business in this industry, because it ain't easy. And I really wanted to unpick that with you. You had great experience, obviously, but to make that decision to say, okay, I know you're doing it online, so it's not like you're looking for retail space, but to make that decision to essentially compete, how many times did you have to go back and forth before you actually said, no, I'm doing this. This is, I'm going to produce makeup and skincare.
I think that from the age of 25, I never worked for a big company. So I was always working for myself, whether that was working as a TV presenter or writing books, or I'd never worked for a big corporate. So I never had to make that decision, let me work, leave a big career, a big corporate environment and go and be an entrepreneur. But working in that world of, and you will know this being a journalist too, you kind of have annual contracts. You never know next year where your contracts take place. And, you know, probably my career went in 10-year cycles. So I did do an online business in 1999, and I had to close it in 2001 because it didn't work out. And we went for a second round, and there was no funding, and there was a crash. And it was just, it was way too early as a business for the traction in the market that was there. It was an online kind of far-fetched concept, and it was just, there wasn't enough customers online. But the idea was there, and I knew, even though I had to close it and I had to, you know, pay off 60 girls who were all committed to this business, and we'd grown this business, and it was, Susanna was off having a baby, and I remember that kind of sadness that something that I'd really wanted, and but I'd been such a workaholic in it. I would be at my desk at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd be calling Suzanne saying, where are you? And she'll go, I'm breastfeeding the baby. You know, it just was, because I wasn't a mother, and I lived and breathed my work then. And so then we went and we closed the business, and I went off for a week to this kind of spiritual retreat in America. And it was a really good thing that I did it, because I think I had felt so sad that I had not had this thing succeed. But I got in touch a little bit with just living in the moment, that feeling of living in the moment. And I got back, and about a month later, the BBC rang and said, will you do a TV show? And we'd done a pilot about 6 months before, which I hadn't thought anything of. So then I had 10 years of television career. And then at the end of that 10 years, there was that feeling again of the cycle has gone past, and, you know, TV is not the flavour of the month for us to be in it anymore. And that's when I thought, this is when I got to take the plunge. And I'd had the idea. You know, I'd gone around, I'd gone to see Leonard Lauder 5 years ago, and he was a friend of a friend of mine, and I went round to have a coffee with him. And I had this kind of Muji Pot thing. I squidged together the formulas. I'd written in typeface the name of each thing on the top. And I sort of put it down there. And I went, Leonard, this is what I want to do. And he said, Trini, I think the idea is phenomenal. And when it's worth $200 million, I'll buy it off you. Okay. So I said, I'm going to hold you to that. So then when I launched, I sent him an email and I said, I launched. You won't know me from a scrap of an apple in an orchard, but
he gives brilliant advice as well, I've heard.
Yeah, I think he's a fantastic man. So having the idea is the easiest part, actually, in anything like that, because you then have to think, how do I execute it? Because I think many women will carry an idea in their head of something they would like to do, which is beyond the scope of what they're currently doing. And they might preserve it there, intact, as a beautiful dream. Because if you start to unwrap the dream and try and make it happen, there's an opportunity of failure. And therefore, if you preserve it and never do anything about it, you can always talk about it. And you never have to destroy the dream.
Yeah, because if somebody says to you, oh, that's a brilliant idea,
yeah,
that in itself is enough to just make you feel great.
You know, just think with a brilliant idea and not do it. But lots of people tell me it's a brilliant idea. Yeah. Get off your fucking ass and do it. Do it. Do it. Just, what is the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is it wasn't such a good idea, you know?
And let me ask you that when you talked about the original idea in, that closed in 2001 and having to take that time out, or not necessarily having to, but taking that time out. Would Twinny London exist if you hadn't had, we'll call it a failure, just for the purposes?
I've had other failures in my life. So I think that definitely things I learnt from it. And if that hadn't been a failure, it could be the far-fetched of today, but it was still would have been too early. So I think I didn't know if it had a chance of success. If we managed to get reinvested, would it have done? Maybe. I don't know. But I never like to look back in that regard. But I think that building the team now, it's made me aware of a few things. We raised 600,000, then we raised 7 million very quickly soon afterwards. I raised 7 million in 3 months. It took me 2.5 years to raise the $2.5 million that I raised for this business. So it was a very different time. Then people fell over themselves to give you investment. Mm. So we spent the money quickly. We spent $7 million in 2 years. Our burn rate was high. We hired people aggressively. We hired some people who we hired in a, you know, head of marketing who had been in a job before, and they used our startup mentality to cruise.
Right.
Okay. So you got to then, you know, what I think I learned most from that experience is you got to spend your money incredibly carefully. You need to grow aggressively, but you really need to think, can I afford to make that middle ranking hire? Do I try and nurture younger people, try to guide them where they might have not have knowledge, try and help them to encourage and flourish that knowledge, which I sometimes find tricky because I'm a control freak, and I'll just say, do it this way, when mm-hmm. I just see what I want the vision to be, as opposed to letting them be encouraged to find their way. So I'm learning that now.
Mm.
But, you know, we're here, there's 12 of us in this tiny little house, and it will save us money before our next round. And we have a younger team, so our overhead is not this huge churn. So there isn't that, oh my God, we'll run out of money before we've even proved the concept, you know. So those are very important things to learn.
I think that's kind of what I'm getting at, is the sense of I like you have beaten myself up very badly when something hasn't gone how I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And now I say, if it hadn't been for that and sort of feeling crap afterwards,
yeah.
I would never have developed that muscle and that tenacity to go after that,
yes.
this.
Yes.
Essentially.
I think you know, we learn from everything. Yes, and it can also, to an extent, put you off because, you know, I found the fundraising part of it very challenging because I met my COO about a year and a half into my idea.
Mm.
And I'd been through two people who'd given me advice before then, but who were just literally, I was paying a consultancy to. And it was very different to work with somebody who really believed in the business and came from an incredibly secure financial knowledge background because they've been CFO, and to bring that experience and together to be a team to go and fundraise.
Mm.
And that helped. And there were still, you know, we'd sit, even though Mark is a man, we'd sit, you know, in a boardroom of men, and they'd just say, I get the personalization. I sort of get the product, but can they be two businesses? And I was like, no, that's, you know, it's the USP is that combination.
Mm.
And then I'll go to other deep tech investors and they'll go, we never deal in product unless it's, you know, you can talk about when you say somebody's had a product on a site, it doesn't mean, it means just what appears.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they said, physical product we don't deal with. I can't get my head around that. Why aren't you selling in a store? Slightly like that, because they wanted software and data technology businesses or deep tech. So it was the challenge was to find somebody who could get their head around both those concepts. And then we found somebody at Unilever Ventures, and one of the directors there, Anna, got it.
Mm.
And in the meeting, I felt she's got it. She gets the concept.
Mm.
And you know, you leave all those meetings excited, and some of them you leave thinking, I'll never call. And she called and she said, let's meet again, and I want to present it now to some other people. And you know, we had quite a few meetings of, you know, could we meet their expectations? But once then they had committed and they invested $1 million, then we could then go out and talk to other people we've been talking to and have, you know, a really respected VC be in there. And then talk to either, and then get to the $2.5 million. But that mm. was a journey.
Would you describe yourself as an entrepreneur?
Yes, 100%.
And what does what's the definition for you?
Working for yourself, not working for another business, and having a self motivation beyond anything, because you've got to be with one other person in the room. Which Federica and I was the first person who worked for me. You know, had 2 years of her and I in the room.
Mm.
And you've got to act like an entrepreneur when there's literally two of you. And Federica, who started as my assistant, is now head of operations, you know, and has grown and has so flourished in the business. And that gives me tremendous joy
mm.
because she really, you know, I was so lucky to have her. And then, you know, you get people who come in and you think they're fantastic, or other people think they need nurturing, or other people think they have a lack of experience.
Mm.
And it's interesting because you never know when you hire somebody if a lack of experience is going to be detrimental or not. Because, you know, we have a woman now we just got in who was in a totally different business, but she had a old people's home, you know. And she decided to finish it. And anyway, she's doing customer care. But she's smart, mum, understands complaints and customer care and, you know, daily basis. So it's totally different industry, but gets it. So even though the technology is very modern for her, she's at one with the Zendesk. She's there. And I'm just thinking...
she's at one with the Zendesk.
And I was thinking of getting her, and I was... And we... You know, what was the most important thing is she was smart, you know, and she had a wonderful, she had a great personality. So it's really interesting how you make your hires. But it's difficult making a decision because you make a decision and then invest in somebody and then it doesn't work out. And then you think, you know, we can't afford anyone who can't really pull their weight.
Right.
Because we're so small and there's so many jobs which are attributed to one person that are beyond their main ream of maybe what they could be in another business. Because in that startup, you do that. You kind of, you know, people have to wear more than one hat, whatever you're doing in the
business. Be adaptable, be agile, all of those things. Yeah. So entrepreneur, the brand... social media star as well.
Well, it's kind of...
I mean, does it take over your entire life and when do you stop?
That's very true. It's, I usually, every day I post something. And since we launched Trinity London, we post, you know, twice on Trinity London and once on Instagram, and then I do stories and I do Facebook. So there's a lot of kind of channels and I have to... So what I do now is I'll go to Zara on a Saturday and I'll do stories there because I always just make it in my routine, and then I will sometimes get the security guard if I'm on my own to film me trying something on. He's Eastern European and he knows me, and I go, "Hello, Trini," and I go, "Can you film me?" And he's so sweet in the King's Road branch. He's the sweetest man in the world.
Favourite bizarro.
So I'll do those and I might film three and then put them out during the week, and then I'll think I must go to another store because it's people say you can't just go to Zara. And then I'll do other stores. But, you know, yesterday, I was thinking I need to do some stories because I got a lot of meetings. So I was going to do three or four and then post them during the week. So I thought, some people said, please go and look in Bowdoin. So I looked in Bowdoin and I thought, picked up something, thinking, that's not bad. Maybe it should be, you know, you have an idea in your mind of what it should cost. So I was saying 60 quid, 120. All right, velvet trousers. And because I really wanted to go in and love some things. And when I looked at it, the collection was very pleasant. There were nice things. And, you know, I used to buy Bowdoin for my kid, for Lila a lot. A little bit more classic, a little bit unscary in fashion terms. And then I went into LK Bennett next door. And I thought, God, that's expensive. So I sort of went down that bit of the high street, which is what I call mid-range high street. And then I rushed to fucking Zara because I could find the same thing of the same quality to me if you don't go for basic and you go for main Zara. More stylishly done. Maybe XL, that's where it kills them. XL is a 14. Add a push, you know, and they change their sizing and it pisses me off because now, you know, what used to be small is now an extra small. They just change the names, the sizing, the product. So I know when I go in there, I'll find 10 things I love. And for me, I need to find 10 things I love, take 10 films. And then, you know, I'll spend 2 days a week in my bathroom. And usually I go on a Saturday and I go to Space NK and I go to Boots and I go to Whole Foods and I buy things. And probably 70% of what I put up, I buy. 30% I run out of and I've been trying something and I ask a PR to send it to me. But for me, I know I would not be so... ploddingly patient to test out a product if I got too many things, you know, and I think that's the payoff, you know, of what it is. But so I'll test something for about a month before I talk about it. And unless it's something which has an immediate effect. So if it's a really good mask, I will test it as soon as I've tried it once, because I'll know they only do it just that moment. So is it good or not? And longer term creams, I will leave longer. So I make time every day and I probably do something every day. And with stories now, Chloe, who does a lot of things for me, and she does this twinning on Friday nights now. We kind of develop things. So we think, okay, that's a theme. So once Chloe was with me and I said, let's try and do an outfit which suits us both. And Chloe is curvy, size 16 on the top and a 14 on the bottom. And big boobs, gorgeous Italian girl. And so we did one, and it was unbelievably popular, and everyone was like, that's great. Because a lot of people had said to me, oh, you're tall and skinny, and so can you not do a store apart from Zara? I'm size 14, it doesn't fit me. And a part of it was a wanting to say to them, yes, but you just have to look differently in a store.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't mean it's excluding your size. You just have to look for the jacket that has a wonderful fluted sleeve, not the tight one. You have to look for a jacket that can give you the waist and give you the hourglass. You need to buy a jacket a size too small, but not too out the buttons, but let it give you a waist. You know, all the things I think you can do to clothing to make them work. So you kind of find themes, you do, and then that gives you your next content for the next few months. And I think that's how it's grown. It's got to be organic. It's got to be what you're feeling is the, for want of a better word, zeitgeist of what's out there, you know. And I never do, oh, the Chanel new lipstick came, let me review it. I'm not that type of reviewer. I just kind of do what works for me. So I'm not very good on oily skin, for example, because I don't have oily skin. But that's just, yeah.
When discussing your videos with several people, one word came up a couple of times, and it was bonkers.
Yes, I've had that word a bit.
As much as we talked earlier about the dialogue that you've now got with your viewers and how it's informed Twinny London, trolls.
Yeah.
Unhelpful comments.
Yeah.
And I saw in the video with Nadine, I think you were talking about a woman who said something about your neck, and you were like, so I thought, do I go and troll her? How do you care? I mean,
the main trolling I'd probably get is comments in the Daily Mail, because I'd have to say, on my site, on Facebook, if ever there's a comment where somebody goes, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about, which I think maybe in 2.5 years there's been 10 comments, then the community will talk to her. So I just leave it. And I leave it up. And they might just say, if you don't enjoy it here, go somewhere else. And I just say, let them. So that's great. On Instagram, I get, once a month, I'll get one comment of somebody saying, oh, that's, you know, bitchy, mean comment.
Mm.
And then they'll do the same again. You know, they'll just say, well, if you don't enjoy it here, go somewhere else.
Mm.
And, you know, I did a mad rainbow outfit I loved 2 days ago, and half the people said, Trini, that's just too much. Because, and one woman went, if you lived a normal life like us and worked in a 9-to-5 job, you would realise how pathetic you seem, or just something like that.
Right.
And I text her back. I think I sent it. I can't remember if I sent it. And I just said, I work a 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. job, and I wear clothes to make me feel great. And I buy from the high street, and that whole outfit actually costs 80 quid. So fuck you. But it was just that they're being, they're being constrained by their own uncomfortable feeling in themselves. It's like when you're in a playground and somebody tells you some gossip, it's because they feel shit about themselves. They want to look better by saying a bit of gossip to make them feel inclusive, or they want to give a bad comment because they're doing that. You know, I'm pointing my finger and pointing four fingers back at me. But so a part of me really should just leave those alone, because I ultimately, somebody's only making themselves unhappy. And I kind of, I don't give a shit.
Mm.
When seeing people say I'm bonkers, I think, thanks. I do.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because it never comes across as though, I mean, I watched you on the back of one of those taxi bikes with a flipping, was it the Charlotte Tilbury face mask on? Yeah. And I just thought it was hilarious because it looked a bit ridiculous.
But it was so practical.
It was practical. It served your purpose, but it just looked like...
I know it was scary for some people if they caught me in the street.
But I don't get the sense that you think, oh, I'll do that because that'll get me more likes or followers or views. No, I think you do it because you're like, wonder if this is an efficient way to use the new Tilbury mask.
Well, it was actually really convenient, because I knew I woke up looking like shit. And then I had cleansed my face, and I put on quite a strong acid peel, I think. And I thought, oh, my God. So I thought, I'll put a mask on. And then the bike said, oh, we're here at 8:15, because you've got to be on at 8:45. And I was like, no, I'm going to go. So I thought, fuck it, I'll keep it on, because then I can, you know, get there, and that will be perfect. So I remember I got there, and sometimes when you get to this morning, there's journalists outside because they're waiting for some famous person who's coming on that day. And I saw these 10 journalists. I'm like, oh, my God. So I kind of peeled it off like this as I got off the bike. But I just thought, I then thought at the end of that, I should wear it every day, because I won't then get the fumes of the city.
Yeah. A barrier, the ultimate barrier cream.
Yeah. I don't think I don't think anything is foreplanned.
Mm. And you're very high energy.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you having a pizza and Netflix night, although I'm sure you do relax in your own
every
way.
Every night.
Oh, do you?
Every night. Not pizza. I'll do that when Lila's home, so that's about once a week. But generally it will be telly supper with box set. Because my energy is all in the day. And this is my poor partner, because he'll say, you give your whole energy the day and I get this damn squid. but I only like to go out probably once a week.
Okay.
Yeah, I really do. And I feel incredibly unshy when I'm in my bathroom chatting to the ladies. But if I go to a big drinks party, there's nothing worse to me. I'd rather go and spend 10 minutes in the loo and go out later, because I just feel that thing of having to find people in the room you know and chat to them, and it's such a superficial conversation, and I'd rather be having dinner with 8 mates or at home watching a movie.
I cannot do big parties now. Yeah. I find the, how are you?
Yeah.
Not that I'm disinterested in how people are, but it's so surface. Yeah. So dinner out. I would class you as one of the people who've been on this podcast who's very successful.
Okay.
And often people who are particularly motivated in this way, and like you say, you have to start up a business is not an easy feat. It doesn't happen. You have to make it happen. Mm. And there will always be a time when it feels like pushing a very big boulder up a very steep hill. Mm. Do you have either a morning routine, or do you have anything that you know you do aside from this that really helps maximize?
When I remember, I have a relationship with meditation. I wouldn't say it's a daily relationship, but
is it complicated?
No, it's not complicated at all. I have a very nice man called Sanjay who used to work in the city and then gave it up and became, you know, kind of meditation yoga person. And a friend of mine who said, you know, you should just speak to this guy. So he came to my house and I chatted to him about, I think I was at the beginning of my investment stuff and I was kind of quite stressed by it. So he just then said, okay, let's say, so I told him everything, and not like a therapist, just chatting, but knowing it was a thoughtful person sitting opposite me. And then I sat down and we recorded it, and he just said, okay, yeah, I want you to, you know, sit there and just feel, you know, feel your feet really stuck to the ground and just feel that there. And sometimes he'll talk about a tree sort of growing up my legs. But a lot of the time we'll start off and we'll say, he said, you know, open your arms, hands out, and feel in your left hand this ball of energy, and really feel that ball of energy, and it's going round and round and round. And then, you know, kind of we'll go on to maybe visualizing things in the future, or visualizing my product being sold, or visualizing people being excited, and it's 10 minutes long. So when I was fundraising, I would listen to them, and sometimes I'd listen to them, you know, driving my Mini at 100 miles an hour to get to the next meeting. But I was listening. There was, you know, if you can do something 5%, do it, better than not do it at all. So I'll see him intermittently once every few months and just say, can we do a new one now? Mm. You know? And so I'll have something new to listen to. And that does help me. And I was saying this thing. There was a thing I went to a few days ago called Women on Women, a really good charity, and I was talking there. And I said something that I'd never said before. As I said it, I thought that's so true. And I had been last week to the CEW Awards.
Mm.
And Caroline Hirons was there, and Nadine. And it was the first time I'd gone inside an industry event as a part of that industry. And I was a bit nervous, and I had to give an award as well. And I was kind of, you know, a bit uncomfortable. And there were some really esteemed people there. And it was an exciting evening. Mm. It was an evening where I felt, at the end of it, a part of it, I felt lots of people had come up and talked to me about things they wanted to perhaps do with me, and it was exciting. And there were many opportunities and many possibilities, and I met people I really respect in the industry. So I went home, and I was in the cab, and I was so excited to go home and tell my partner, you know, oh, this and that. And I had this feeling, and this feeling was really strong, and it was kind of building up in me, this feeling of excitement and endless possibilities, and anything could happen. So I got back and he'd been out to, and then he took an hour to get home. So I just played music because I wanted to keep that feeling. Mm. So then when I was saying this thing to people yesterday, and I said, you know, sometimes there are days when Sanjay has said about that ball and there's no bloody energy in that left hand.
Mm.
You know, it's like, it's a flaccid thing.
Mm.
So what we can do is we can very much take our minds back to that moment we felt something. So, you know, as I was talking this thing yesterday, I said, you know, I remember that feeling of the feeling I had in the back of the cab of that limitless energetic possibilities. And let me put that in my bloody hand now. And I felt as I was doing this talk, I said, my hand is heating up with that energy now. It's there. Because I really, it's in me. Everything is in us. It's in me. I'm going to put it out and put it there. And then whatever that meditation, how it developed, it would develop with energy. So that I believe in really strongly. Whether we can be disciplined every day to do something I haven't done. I haven't gone and walked in the park since I did Daniel Shine last Sunday. And before that, I haven't done any exercise since September. All right. And I feel I'm 53. I need to be healthy, even just walking. Mm. I need to do something. And I haven't. You know, if I looked at that heart thing on the Apple thing, I walk 1,000 steps a day or something really pathetic, even though I'm really energetic. So I kind of know I need to start next week, and whether I will, I don't know. But there's an underlying sense also that I'm 53, I'm a mother of a 14-year-old. I lead a very pressurized life, and I need to do something to balance that out. Mm-hmm. You know, when I know that you, because we had this conversation before you, we started recording about your having that feeling of having to take a time away.
Totally, of just having nothing left.
Yeah.
Nothing
left. So your energy just went overnight?
No, it had been going for a long time.
But how had you masked it? How had you kind of told yourself you were fine? Had you just carried on?
I had, by going to extremes. So I was going to the gym trying to run, mm-hmm. and I couldn't run anymore, and I'd run a half marathon. I was like, well, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I've just reached an age where running isn't for me anymore. So I decided to start weightlifting. Fine, I'm going to turn everything to muscle and burn
that's
fat.
Good, yeah.
But obviously that made it even worse. And then I had Reiki, which I'd always had a very dim view of before. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a bit sort of hocus pocus. And I said nothing to this woman, and I just got on the bed and just tears, and she were pouring out of my eyes. And she said, don't worry, just close your eyes and I'm going to see what's happening here. And mm-hmm. she just said, you just have no energy. But she said, but you've given it to other people. Mm-hmm. And now that you need it for you for the first time ever, you don't have it. Mm-hmm. And that was actually a real wake-up call. Mm-hmm. That was when lots of big life decisions mm-hmm. were like, all of those people, I'm sorry, not anymore.
Yeah.
And it was really, really positive. But yeah, so I worry sometimes. I know that when I go, and when I see someone like you who's very high energy, I think I'm always worried now about being kind to myself. And if I'm having a busy week, I think, actually, go to bed at 9 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
Which sounds so basic. No,
that's very true, yeah.
But it makes a big difference. Mm. It really does.
Yeah.
So there we are. Well, we're at the end of our time together, which is heartbreaking.
I'm going to take that thought with me, actually, because it's good to get to something from this, and I do feel you have a very good point. Just not that I'll be lying down flat,
mm-hmm.
but just to do those nurturing things.
Mm. Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah,
I've taken a lot away from today as well.
Well, thank you.
It's a two-way exchange. Always a pleasure. Come back anytime. Before you go, I just wanted to say thank you so much for tuning into the Emma Gunn Show. I really hope that you're enjoying it. If you are, please do subscribe or leave a review wherever it is that you listen. And if something has happened during the show that you would like me to elaborate on, or you just want to get in touch, it couldn't be easier. Just email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Twitter and Instagram, where I'm at Emma Gunns. I would absolutely love to hear from you, and I hope that you'll tune into the next episode, where I have another excellent guest. Thank you.